even though I give you a lot of bad news on this program, there are a lot of good things happening or interesting things happening if you follow the news regularly. Last March, March 29th, the night before Ronald Reagan was shot, I did a broadcast on KLRB here on the infighting in the White House. The sheet that accompanies this broadcast that goes out with the cassettes had the title, "The Top Dogs Are Fighting, Musical Chairs Who Will Kill Their Team Members Off." And I explained how Alexander Haig is angry. He wanted control of domestic and foreign emergency powers. And the battle team, I've referred to them, and I mentioned on that broadcast, the battle team, all direct links to the assassination of John Kennedy. Now, all of these people that I mentioned on March 29th, the night before Ronald Reagan was shot, I mentioned had links back to the Kennedy assassination. Almost all the figures that I mentioned on this program in the past 10 years, this is the 11th year, or any time that I read in the news, almost every single one that's making the news with these scandals and various plots goes back to Dallas, that very important day, 17 years ago, it'll be 18 years ago, in three more weeks. And I said, this battle team who are fighting go back to the Kennedy assassination, and I listed five people: Alexander Haig, Walter Stessel, Richard Pipes, Richard Allen, and William Casey. Now, just today in this morning's paper, in the San Jose Mercury and the San Francisco Chronicle, there were two large articles. I'm sure back east you got them too. One is said, "Behind the Bitter Feuds in the White House." Now, I was calling those feuds in March, and this is November. "Backbiting at the White House jeopardizes the United States' economic and their foreign policies." That's the San Francisco Chronicle. Another article, "The boss puts his foot down. He asks for peace. The collegial spirit of Reagan White House has come apart on two fundamental aspects, the making of economic and foreign policy." And it's got a picture of Richard Allen and Alexander Haig and Treasury Secretary Reagan and Mr. Stockman, and they're all fighting each other. They're similar, and I've compared it to Little Black Sambo, where the tigers take the clothing of Sambo and they strut around, each one thinking he's the grandest tiger in the jungle. Now, I don't know how these people can handle their relationships. All of them worked with Theodore Shackley, Edwin Wilson, Frank Drebin, George Corcoran. They all have so much on each other, and they can't afford to fire one of them or there'll be trouble, and they can't afford to keep them. These are the conspirators. They go back to Dallas. They're in the White House now, but they're getting unglued. They really are fighting each other. And I have many, many articles on Reagan and his team. Can he shake up his team? Can the president stop the Haig-Allen feuding? The White House plays down the feud. Haig paranoia follows him. He's looking for enemies in the room. Haig and Allen feud boils in the open. There are many articles, and you've seen them all week, how they're going to resolve it, if they're going to resolve it. A story saying if they fire Richard Allen, Haig won't do the president any good anyway. If they fire Haig, he knows too much. They can't afford to fire him. They're in a no-win position now. They've got Corcoran over there talking. They've got Frank Turple. They've got Edwin Wilson, Thomas Kleins, Theodore Shackley, and plus these other five. I can name 30 or 40 people, John Connolly and every person on that intelligence board that Reagan appointed, Edward Bennett Williams, Mr. Perot. They all know what happened in the past, and they're sitting there with a hot potato, and they're just passing it around, and someday it simply has to come out. It will come out, but all these people may come down. I believe the Reagan gate, the real Reagan gate, is the Wilson Turple Corcoran story. I think in the next half a year, three quarters of a year, it could even bring Ronald Reagan out of office. I can't tell you why now, but you'll see it maybe in a few weeks to come, three or four weeks to come. I don't see how he'll be able to stay in office as this scandal unfolds. In the meantime, he has plans, or the government has plans for some of us, and I better be getting my winter coat. I got an article from the Houston Post. A refugee detention center has been approved. Now, we decided that the immigration naturalization would stop having refugees in. They're going to put a limit on refugees. We can't certainly bring from a war in Middle East people up to Wyoming, up on the Canadian border. But in Glasgow, Montana, the federal government has repurchased what it had before. It's an Air Force base of 51,000 acres that they're setting up on an abandoned Air Force bomber base, a detention center. They've put $100 million into the detention center. It was deactivated in 1968, and it's just been turned over now in 1979. It was turned to the county, and now it's going to be turned into a detention center. It's been approved that 51,000 acres in northern Montana will become a detention center. There's already $100 million into it. So if the anti-war movement goes good and if there are protesters in this country or race riots, I venture to say they'll end up in Glasgow, Montana, because that detention center is ready and it's very isolated. That's a lot of acres. And if you look at the map of the United States, it's just a little bit over to the right is North Dakota, Minot, North Dakota, and that's that base, that Air Force base where John Carr, the buddy of David Berkowitz, was stationed, where he died, and that's where that young woman lived who went out to Stanford Chapel. She was murdered. They lived near Grand Fork, close to Minot, North Dakota, and it's not very far. Minot comes into the David Berkowitz, son of Sam case, and out to the Stanford, California, Stanford campus. This is our Siberia, I guess. This is a place that you can keep your eye on. $100 million on a lot of acreage, and you can do a lot of damage with 51,000 acres and $100 million in a deserted base like that. So forewarned, there's a nice detention center waiting for some of us, I suppose. Now, there are some subjects that I want to bring up on this broadcast. I don't know if I'll have time this evening. One is the big controversy of the MedFly spraying out here in California and the motives for that, which I believe are to try to get Governor Brown out of office because of the MedFly scandal. There have been a lot of radio broadcasts in the Bay Area and discussions of this because the planes brought in were federal government planes run by the Central Intelligence Agency, used the head of one of the corporations as Mr. Dooley, 17 years with the CIA. He worked with Lieutenant Conine in Southeast Asia. He worked, again, with Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shackley and the assassination teams I'm talking about tonight. They had the Evergreen airline. It took over Intermountain operation, CIA airplanes. They insisted on these fertile. They were supposed to be sterile flies. They weren't sterile. They were fertile. There's supposed to be several hundred thousand flown in from Peru. There were 200 to 300 million. And it's become a very expensive operation in this state, bankrupting the state, that makes Jerry Brown look bad to ruin his political aspirations. It may boomerang now because congressional committees are going into the MedFly story. There's an article in the paper today. The $100 million MedFly fiasco is the latest evidence of our monumental ignorance. We call the Bay of Pigs the fiasco, but that was a good motivation for killing John Kennedy and using the anti-Castro Cubans to murder a president of the United States. $100 million that the state couldn't afford to lose. The planes came out of NASA and the Air Force bases that belonged to NASA. They had sprayed the Indian Reservation, this gang, with their CIA airplanes in Arizona, 1978, 1979. The CIA did the spraying then, and there are agents of the CIA involved with this. They selected the sprays. In Arizona, people were getting sick and being rushed to Scottsdale Hospital, and they weren't told that there was 2,4-D and 20 other chemicals. They were spraying the Indians in the reservation, the Pima Reservation of Indians, and they were sick in droves. This Air America was a partner of later with Anna Chenault, the Chenault Association, in 1946. Air America was formed in 1950 by Mr. Dooley. He was the man behind Air America, and then he was the man behind the airlines that are doing the spraying at the present time. As I say, 17 years with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's quite a scandal of the Evergreen Airlines and Intermountain Airlines, written up in several books. Victor Marchetti's Cult of Intelligence talks about Mr. Dooley. There are other books, the Rockefeller hearings on CIA operations overseas or at home. The Southern Air Transport, SAT, was originally founded in 1945. 49. It was 50% owned by the CIA. It was the plane that Dag Hammarskjöld was on when he went down on a peace mission in the Congo. Intermountain Aviation had its headquarters in Marana, Arizona. It still has, with Mr. Dooley. And it was founded, interestingly enough, after the Bay of Pigs fiasco. The CIA decided that they had to have their own airline, that they couldn't count on the United States forces to protect them. The CIA is a private army, so they made their own airline as a means of getting around to do what they want, such as the war in Laos or in Southeast Asia without telling Congress, and they were involved in other coups in Portugal and all around the world. It's their own CIA's own airline, and it was this airline that was brought in, Mr. Dooley, who masterminded the forming of Air America. He used to fly for Pan Am, went to Harvard, and then left. Was in the CIA until 1971 and set up his own franchise of airplanes and worked again in the Bay of Pigs with the Double Check Group in Miami. The same people that were involved in the spraying, the Mellothion in California, the $100 million, the risks on people's lives, that same group, again, are linked to Wilson and Turple, the people who were involved with the Kennedy assassination, the Double Check, and Dooley had even set up the Civil Air Patrol, and David Ferry was running that when Lee Harvey Oswald was his student before Oswald went in the Marines. Dooley has a history going way back in the United States with the government, with the CIA, 17 years with the CIA, ruining Governor Brown's career, making fun of him, blaming the Medfly errors on him, and it's become a political football that involves, again, the Central Intelligence Agency chemically spraying people, using CIA planes, determining where the flies would come from, bankrupting the state while Governor Brown is the governor, spending all this money, and using it as a political operation to catch two or three flies that can't really move too far out of their geographic area. They don't travel all over wildly, as one would believe. It's a political football that I may do more on the origins of the airlines, the CIA, and the role they've played in the last few years. I don't have time this evening, but I will get back to it because there's many people who listen to this broadcast up in the Bay Area and in California where the Mellothion was sprayed, and they can begin spraying again any time they want. But I'm going to leave that for the moment, and I want to introduce a name to you that was in the news in May, just this last May, and tell you about him because it's an important name, and I'll be updating later the information. I can't give you all the reasons I'm talking about him now, but I want to give you some. His name is Otto von Bolschwing, B-O-L-S-C-H-W-I-N-G. The Los Angeles Times had an article on von Bolschwing, May 28, 1981, California man accused of Nazi war crimes. Now, the federal government has 223 additional cases besides von Bolschwing to go into, but he's described by Robert Jackson in the Los Angeles Times as one of the highest-ranking Nazi war criminals that has ever been located in the United States. And one of the reasons von Bolschwing is important is because of his relation to Nikolai Maloksa of the Romanian Iron Guard, who was brought into Richard Nixon's office in Whittier. He was a very important member of the Gestapo, and he headed the division over Adolf Eichmann. Eichmann was killed and sentenced in Israel for war crimes about 16 years ago, but his superior, von Bolschwing, has been living very fruitfully in California all of this time and wasn't brought in with Adolf Eichmann for the same trial. In 1941-1940, he was in Nazi intelligence. He was an officer in Romania. He was a top advisor to Adolf Eichmann on how to exterminate. He worked for the United States government, the OSS, during the war period of World War II, while he also was Himmler's SS agent and Adolf Eichmann. He had a dual role, and the story of von Bolschwing is one that you must become more familiar with during the years, is that while our fellows were dying at the Battle of the Bulge and in Southeast Asia and in Europe, while the war was going on, Alan Dulles and the OSS chief and Mr. Donovan were working with the top Nazis at the same time that the war was going on and making provisions for them to come to this country to be safe, to be very wealthy, to be heads of businesses while the war was still going and no peace treaty had even been signed. He, in 1959, he was naturalized as an American citizen. The reason he might be deported now, although he says he's old and sick, is that he concealed his past membership as an advisor to the Gestapo. Now, I think that would be a little hard to do if he was Adolf Eichmann's aide all this time, 1934 to 1941 in the Gestapo. Eichmann headed the Gestapo Bureau of Jewish Affairs and von Bolschwang, gave information and advice to Himmler's SS and to Eichmann on what they should do. He was the chief of Himmler's intelligence for Romania. He was part of the Iron Guard. He assisted the Iron Guard, and this was a select clique of violent, fascist, anti-Semitic people. According to the Los Angeles Times description, they murdered, they persecuted both Jews and non-ethnic Romanians from at least 1940 to 41. He was right hand in glove with Nicolae Moloxa. In a book, The Order of the Death's Head, by Heinz Hani, this is the story of Hitler's SS. On page 334, it tells about Adolf Eichmann and his attitudes towards the SS. It said, interestingly enough, he didn't know whether to join the SS or the Masonic Lodge. But under the tutelage of a particular person, Mr. Mildenstein, he learned to be anti-Semitic. And then Eichmann was given the Zionist organization desk, and he learned Hebrew. He learned Zionist words. He learned to go to Palestine. He knew all about the country. He studied Theodor Herzl's books. He knew Hebrew grammar. And you think of these people like Adolf Eichmann as distasting or disliking anything Jewish, but he was an expert. And he had a memorandum, a book called The Zionist World Organization. And people thought that he actually came from Palestine. He was such an expert on Zionist World Organization and Palestine. And when he really got into the question of Zionists in Germany and the Palestinian question, he called on his friend Otto von Bolschwang, who was a member of the German party, the SD, and former with Adolf Hitler's group. And he was in contact with Palestinians and Germans in the intelligence activities in Palestine. This was in the 40s, and von Bolschwang was working with Adolf Eichmann on the Jewish desk and Zionism at that time. Now, he worked in the Romanian Iron Guard, and in that book, Wanted Search for Nazis in America, and I mentioned it on this program before, Howard Bloom's book, it tells about Nicolae Moloxa and how he worked with the head of the American Office of Strategic Service in Romania, a man named Grady McClausen. So that von Bolschwang worked with the OSS, and Nicolae Moloxa worked with the OSS. Moloxa got $2,460,000 in American money when he came to the United States. He worked for the OSS, and then he came to the United States and was paid $2,460,000 for a plant of his in Romania that was taken by the Russians. And he went to Chase Manhattan, and they gave him this money at Chase National Bank. He had millions of dollars put away for during the war that they usually kept for war criminals. But he got that money from Chase Manhattan. He got another $2,460,000. Then Moloxa went to Secretary of State John Foster Dulles and his law firm of Sullivan Cromwell and former Air Force Secretary Thomas Finletter and Under Secretary of State Adolf Burrell. And on their behalf, he got into this country to pass through. He wanted to become a citizen. And Moloxa went to a junior senator from California, Richard Nixon, who introduced a private bill in 1951 to let him to remain permanently in this country. The bill was defeated, but he went to Whittier, California, where he used Nixon's office as the headquarters for a dummy front of Western Tube, then went down to Argentina to Martin Bormann and Otto Scorzetti, and that's where they set up headquarters for the Odessa, the World Nazi Organization, and he came into this country through the Iron Guard to Richard Nixon's office And his friend, Mr. Von Bolschwang, came into this country to California also and has been living here ever since Maloxa died a few years ago. There's another book, The Minister of Death. I have not received. The book is in New York. A subscriber to these tapes has obtained 3 or 4 copies. He's sending me one, and it has discussions of Adolf Eichmann and Otto von Bolschwang and how they worked in Palestine and helped set up Israel. And the book is on its way here. I haven't read it, but pages were copied for me. And this friend wrote, I've sent you copies relating to von Bolschwang. In this book is fascinating, and it shows the Nazis were well behind the Jewish state. And I've believed for many, many years the Nazis were behind what is known as Israel today. Interestingly enough, as I say on the program this evening, 60 Minutes, when they talked about morality, Turpel said, well, Israel ships us, Amin, our weapons. And Amin is a person who has the picture of Adolf Hitler all around him and praises Adolf Hitler. And they supplied weapons to Sadat and Nasser, who were formed and put into power by the Nazis, and money from Nazi parties, and trained with Mein Kampf and reading Mein Kampf. There's a book about Sadat that was sent to me that mentions how Sadat made all of his military people read Mein Kampf, and that he was told in 1954 that Adolf Hitler was alive. What letter do you want to send to him? You see lots of literature about the fact that Hitler is alive. So Wilson and Turpel and Korkola are arming Idi Amin and Gaddafi and the PLO and the most violent people, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel. And the Israelis seem to be going along with this and working with these people. It looks like they're angry at them, but not really angry, not angry enough to expose them, and simply playing the game. So the story of Adolf Eichmann, written in the book The Minister of Death, talks about his relationship to Otto von Bolschwang and their work with the Haganah in Palestine and also with the Gestapo simultaneously. And when I get a hold of this book, I'll do more about this man for you, because his relationship to California politics is very interesting. I can't go into all of it now. Just if you have books on Nazi Germany, keep this name in mind and look them up. I have some sources now, and get that straight in your heads, because the name will become important. As I say, I can't go into it for certain reasons at this time, but I'll be bringing it up later. In 1972, in that article, my first published article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? Many of you are familiar with this and have the article, and some of you don't. In the section How Richard Nixon Came to Power, I described his relationship to Alan Dulles. And at the end of World War II, or while the war was going on, Alan Dulles was in Switzerland for the purpose of rounding up and importing to the United States what he called German specialists. This is what I wrote in 72, 9 years ago, that by 1972, he was rounding them up, and by 1942. And in 1942, Alan Dulles was working with Otto von Bolschwang, who was Eichmann's advisor, and the OSS. They began to put him in the OSS the exact year that I said that Alan Dulles was rounding these people up to bring them to the United States, 2 years before the war ended, or its fate was even decided. I wrote 9 years ago, the United States was making arrangements for these Nazis, scientists, arms experts to come to our democracy, for which the boys were fighting and dying at that moment. From 1945 until 1952, the U.S. military brought over 642 alien specialists and their families from Nazi Germany. And then I wrote, enter Richard Milhouse Nixon, who was serving the Navy Bureau of Aeronautics, and he was stationed in New England with the Combat Air Transport Command right out of the South Pacific. And his role, April, May, June 1945, was to help bring these Nazis into this country. And then Richard Nixon, who was in New York serving the Navy and Navy intelligence, gets a telephone call to come to California to run against Jerry Voorhees. Now, when I wrote this article 9 years ago, I didn't know that Congressman Jerry Voorhees from California had gone before the House of Representatives to fight about holding IG Farben, the Nazi cartel, together. What Voorhees was telling Congress was that we will have World War III if we don't break up this Nazi cartel. And, of course, that new book that's out on Bormann, Nazi in Exile, tells about the 750 corporations that Martin Bormann set up to begin the Fourth Reich as soon as this other war was over. There was a warning by Voorhees and others that we would be just where we are today. And Richard Nixon was placed by the aerospace, by the people working with the Nazis, and his office was later used by the Iron Guard and von Bolschwing's companion from Romania. And this whole can of worms of the Red Scare, the House on American Activities, the killing of labor leaders, blacklisting people, emanates from the end of World War II when these people were brought here, and Richard Nixon and J. Edgar Hoover and a team of people from the State Department, the intelligence community, were getting ready and building up their muscles for that next war that we read about every single day in the newspapers from Weinberger and Haig and the President of the United States, the threats and talk of war, a limited war, full war, and so forth. This article I wrote 9 years ago had the story of Alger Hiss trying to break up the cartels and the German rearming, illegal rearming in the 30s, and I hit the nail on the head on how Nixon came to power. And after I wrote that article, then other books came out and other people's names are surfacing. These deportation papers that were in the Los Angeles Times in May on von Bolschwing and the Iron Guard is just one more link to Nixon's office and the Nazism in this country. There's a woman, Vanessa Redgrave, who's had many feelings about the PLO, not the PLO funded by Wilson, Turple, and Corcoran, but the real needs of the Palestinians. And she had a statement this last September in the newspaper that she's interested in showing the influence of Nazism on Israel's Zionist philosophy. From Beirut, British actress Vanessa Redgrave says she wants to make a documentary film with the Palestinian Liberation Group to show the influence of Nazism on Israel's Zionist policy. If von Bolschwing and the top Gestapo people with Eichmann made the Zionist policy, then that's where the Nazism came in, and it stayed there. And, of course, Begin came out from Poland into Siberia, into the Soviet camps, and is a violent anti-communist, anti-Soviet person, and he is dealing with the far right-wing, the most extreme right-wing fascists that there are on planet Earth. So Redgrave, who's been a long supporter of the PLO, is asking people to understand that the Zionist movement is a Nazi movement, and it influenced, Nazis influenced Zionism. And I hate to tell you this, but I agree with her 100%, and I think a lot of information coming in will verify that. There's a lot to think about and talk about. We can't barely scratch the surface because these are complex problems. But watch the Triple Corcoran story, Wilson, that's Edwin Wilson, Theodore Shackley, and Thomas Kleins. Those five people are terribly important, and they may begin to tell some other stories. If they're prosecuted or threatened, they'll reveal more. And their lifetime is the story of America from World War II to the present. They're very important people, and you'll be reading a lot of them for many years to come. In the meantime, we'll keep watching the news and see where they surface next, which countries, what they're doing. And I'll be back with you next week to update the Wilson Turple stories for you.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.